I was riding the Queen Streetcar East, sitting by the window in my usual spot, heading home, minding my own business, when I heard the driver raise his voice. He wouldn't let a man board the streetcar because the guy apparently had the wrong transfer. The would-be passenger sounded confused. He was poorly dressed, couldn't speak English very well, had a heavy accent, and seemed genuinely perplexed about the transfer system. But the driver was insistent.
This transfer's no good. Understand? You gotta pay more, another $2, or get off the streetcar.
The poor passenger, transfer in hand, didn't understand. But the driver, raising his voice again as if the passenger couldn't hear him, yelled,
"Look, you pay or you get off!"
Now, you know me. I'm really quite shy. And ordinarily, I just sit back, let this slip by. I mean, what could I say and do? Why bother? It was none of my business, really. But today, at this moment, for some inexplicable reason, something rubbed me the wrong way. So I said quite loudly,
"Hey, quit hassling the guy. Let him board the bus."
Fuck. You know me. I'm really quite shy. Ordinarily, I just sit back and let this slip by. I mean, what could I do and why and bother? It was none of my business, really. But today, at that moment, it just popped out. The whole streetcar could hear it for sure. And perhaps everybody was thinking I was some sort of loudmouth anarchist agitator, troublemaking, good-for-nothing smartass. But really, that's not me at all. I just didn't like what I saw. I didn't think it was fair. I turned all red, shrinking back into my seat, folding my collar, hoping nobody could see me, thinking, now I've done it. Fuck, I'm in deep shit. I'll get kicked off the streetcar. It'll be on the front page. Shit. But suddenly, all hell broke out, and everybody started yelling at the driver.
Yeah, leave the guy alone. Let him on the streetcar. Quit hassling him.
I couldn't believe it. The middle-aged Chinese man in front of me, the mom with a child across the aisle, the tattooed Pierce punks from Winnipeg, they all started yelling. And now everybody was yelling at the driver to back off. The driver,
noticeably angry now, turned around and yelled back at us,
"Well then, who the hell's gonna pay his fare?"
And wouldn't you know it, this little old lady, she could have been your grandma, your baba, or mine, marched to the front of the fare box and popped in a toonie saying,
"Here's the money, sonny."
Clink.
The driver shrugged, turned around, and off we went. The new passenger thanked the old woman and came down the aisle smiling at everybody, and the whole streetcar was now buzzing with something different. You could feel it.
That was Norman Naratsky, spoken word, cabaret, news, poetry, fiction, and sex show performer, in town from Montreal, performing at the Mondragon Bookstore and Coffee House on Friday in a dramatic reading of his new book, Lunch for Insurgents, part of the Brain Food Trilogy. Black Mask tracked him down after the show and asked him a few questions.
I wonder when you're writing material, what your intent is as far as how you're going to connect with the audience. Are you interested in inciting people? Are you interested in entertaining and educating and in some combination? Are there more things?
I want to get them excited, you know, and I want to get them all psyched up and worked up and ready to go out there and make love and start riots and revolution.
Are there things you think about when you're transforming, or do you think of it even as transforming kind of politics into art, or can you even separate the two? If you think of it in that way, what kind of things are you thinking about when you're making that transformation happen?
Well, I'm thinking about what's the relationship between politics and art, which is a historical relationship for many, many artists, and for, you know, political activists as well as thinking creative terms. I'm thinking we need freedom in order to be alive, in order to be creative, in order to resist, but also as artists, we need freedom to express ourselves and freedom to explore, experiment with whatever medium it is we're working with. So for me, it's always a challenge, how to incorporate politics in my art, how to apply art to my politics, how to make the best use possible of whatever medium it is I'm working with, whether it's theater, poetry, music, or visual art, how to maximize the use of the medium so that whatever message, idea, thought, story I have that I want to communicate. How can I make that even more effective? How can I make that even more effective as art? How can I make that into good art? And how can I make that art into effective political art? It's an ongoing challenge. It's an ongoing preoccupation. It permeates every level of my creative process. I think back to when I was more political and less creative, and I think back to all the lessons I learned as a political activist, and of those lessons, what is it that I can distill in my artwork that would be useful for other people to read about, to hear about? So it makes for an interesting discussion, it makes for a fascinating question, and it makes for ongoing research, and I'm like intending actually to write about the process. There's some books of non-fiction books that I want to release that will discuss my creative process, how I work as an artist that's socially and politically engaged, who considers himself an anarchist. How do I use those politics? How do I work with both perspectives?
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned lessons you've learned and kind of wanting to convey them through art. In writing this recent book, is there any of that? Can you talk about some of the particular lessons that you've learned that you've been wanting to get across?
Almost every piece I write, there contains like lessons that I learned, whether they're lessons from other people or lessons, you know, from personal experience. For example, among the pieces I shared with you tonight about the Army of Dreamers. You know, it's been years and years I've noticed a resurgence of activism, you know, across the continent and around the world in many ways that wasn't present before all those years. And I am learning so much from newer, younger, more inspired, more creative activists. And I'm thinking, yeah, how can I share their words of wisdom with everyone else? So I'll come up with a piece like An Army of Dreamers that was inspired by Subcomandante Marcos's words, but also by the actions of people who are resisting globalization, you know, in the four corners of the world, and people who are building a new grassroots movement from the ground up in terms of resistance to what we're the issues confronting us today. So there are so many lessons on so many levels, and almost every piece I write, I try to share some of those lessons.
In the readings and performance tonight, it seemed like there was a lot of kind of personal, like things were presented on a very kind of personal level, and there was a lot of, it seemed like, kind of spontaneous reaction to things that were happening to kind of people being portrayed in the readings performance. What do you think the importance of spontaneity is in terms of politics and broadly?
I can't imagine being any other way. I mean, I can't imagine living any other way. I mean, there's never been a blueprint for what I do, for how I live. My responses, my artwork, if I want to call it that, is in response to influences around me, the images, the thoughts, the news, the things I see in the street, you know, around me on a daily basis. And my responses tend to be instantaneous, either like yes or no. And I want to capture those moments, which is what I try to do, capture those moments of rage, of inspiration, of love, of frustration, capture those moments and share them with others in order to provoke, I guess, a dialogue, a public dialogue, which is like my overall objective in all the work that I do, is to provoke dialogue. So in terms of being spontaneous, also in performance, I can't repress it. It's irrepressible feelings as a, you know, a guy with a big mouth and a guy who likes to, you know, like stand in front of a group of people and share some thoughts. I can't imagine any other way of being, and I can't imagine any other way of working either. That's not to say that inspiration of the moment doesn't sometimes require weeks, months, years of work before it's transformed into something that makes sense. Because, you know, there are books that I work on. Like I'm working on a novel, which was inspired by some very spontaneous things I saw in Italy on the spot. but the novel is taking me a year and a half now to write out. And so it's a lot of like deep reflection about those spontaneous moments, and it means I'm doing a lot of research, historical research, in order to support my rage of the moment when I was in Italy experiencing witnessing incredible injustice all around me. So I took that moment, and now that moment has become a year and a half. And in terms of the creative process, well, yeah, it's a year and a half of spontaneous creativity, but a lot of research, a lot of reading, thinking, discussing, you know, going online, going to the library, watching movies, listening to music, reflecting, talking to other people. So I have work that requires that. So a little less spontaneous.
Yeah. I happened to be in Montreal a little over a year ago at last year's Anarchist Book Fair, and I saw a performance you did that was great. It was to do with, actually, I'm mentioning it because you brought up Italy, and it was to do with kind of two different time periods. One was more contemporary and about just really harsh conditions of Roma people in Italy, and then the historical stuff. I think was more anarchists in Italy, if I remember correctly, around World War II or maybe even earlier, before World War II. Is that tied into the book you're talking about writing? And I was really excited to hope that I could maybe see that performance again and maybe in Winnipeg one day. So if it's being translated into a book now or if it's taking both forms, do you want to talk more about that project?
I did a theater piece based on the novel I'm currently working on. The novel I'm currently working on is called Cazzarola, which in Italian means like, ah, frick. Or instead of saying, ah, fuck, it's ah, frick. And that's Cazzarola. It's a book about the history of anarchist resistance to fascism from the beginning. It's a family, generations of family that resisted fascism from the earliest days. You know, when Mussolini in the early, late teens and early 20s to present-day Italy, where neo-fascists are responsible for the backlash against Roma refugees and responsible for acts of incredible violence against Roma refugees, burning down camps of refugees, attacking Roma in the streets. So the novel is a political, romantic, historical novel based on the life of this family and the resistance to fascism. It's a love story between an Italian man, young man, and a young Roma refugee girl. And it's about the anarchist response to all of this all during those years. So because I was in the middle of writing the novel and the Anarchist Theater Festival was coming up really quickly in Montreal, I thought, I'll take extracts from the novel and I'll transform them into a theater piece. So I took extracts of the novel, I took four different characters, I played those four characters on stage and did basically a 20-minute live dramatization of the novel that is currently a work in progress. One day, once I finish that book, once that novel comes out, I will be touring the book with that theater piece, and it will be an expanded theater piece. It will be a much longer piece, and that's when you get to see it in Winnipeg. When the book comes out next year, knock on the wood.
Awesome. Do you want to talk at all about what had brought you to Italy in the first place and some of the experiences you have there?
I was in Italy because one of my books, The Anarchist and the Devil Do Cabaret, published by Black Rose Books a few years ago, was translated and published in Italian by an Italian book company. And they invited me to come to Rome to launch my book officially at the Rome Book Fair, which is an enormous book fair, you know, official commercial book fair in Italy with tens of thousands of people. And at the same time, they organized a tour for me of all of Italy. And I brought my violin, and I performed extracts from The Anarchist and the Devil Do Cabaret with my violin and a looper sampler. And as I was touring that book, that show, I was noticing in the news incredible incidents of, this neo-fascist-inspired racial backlash against Roma refugees. One Roma had been accused of murdering an Italian housewife, and that incident was blown entirely out of proportion and became a lightning rod for fascist, neo-fascist groups across the country. And it helped propel the Berlusconi government like back into power, but with a huge mandate, with all these neo-fascists now in power all across Italy. Mayors of towns were elected that were neo-fascists, and they were passing resolutions to ban Roma from the city to kick Roma out, to force Roma to be fingerprinted and photographed. And it was just this tremendous xenophobic, racist reaction to the presence of Roma refugees. And that struck me. I couldn't believe it. I came back to Montreal, started doing research, and a few months later, they actually burned down two Roma refugee camps in Napoli, burned them to the ground, burned down 300 little makeshift huts, and chased
the state or the police?
A gang of neo-fascists in the neighborhood, on the outskirts of Napoli, one of the poorest neighborhoods, inspired by denunciations from government officials and police and newspapers, went out, physically attacked this camp, physically drove out Roma men, women, children, grandparents with sticks and stones and Molotov cocktails and iron bars and chains, and then burned their camps to the ground. And the Roma refugees were basically living in fear, terrified. We don't know how many of them died. There's no official count, but nobody reports that in Italy. That doesn't make the news. So that's what inspired my book.
That's really awful. And I guess a more positive note, you mentioned earlier before this kind of upswing of rebelliousness and radicalism over the last years. But I'm really interested to ask you, having been active around anarchism in the 1980s, it's a time I don't hear a lot about, especially in Canada. I wonder if you have any general reflections on what things were like in the 80s in Canada in terms of what was going on with anarchists and stuff along those lines.
Well, there was a rebirth of interest in anarchist ideas in the late 70s. That's when it actually started in Canada and the United States and around the world. All of a sudden, the late 70s, people were disenchanted with Marxist authoritarian ideologies, movements, parties, groupuscules, little Leninists running around proclaiming Mao truths. And there was a rebirth of interest in anti-authoritarian anarchist ideas in the late 70s around the world. And that spawned movements, I wouldn't say large movements, but anarchist-generated, anarchist-visionary movements across Canada, from Vancouver to Montreal, Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, you name it, Regina, all across the country. And unfortunately, then we had the incident with the direct action, the Vancouver Five, the Squamish Five, and that particular bit of urban guerrilla experimentation led to a huge repression. And a movement that was just budding and beginning to grow in the late 70s and early 1980, 81, all of a sudden got squashed by the state, almost coast to coast. And that stopped things for several years. And then towards the late 80s and in the early 90s, but late 80s, again, anarchists just came out of the woodwork and came back together again to regroup and fight again. And they were, anarchists were in the forefront of the anti-globalization movement up until 9/11. And once again, 9/11 came and back to the closets and back to the drawing board, and people disappeared. And yet, since 9/11, what have we seen? Another rebirth, and tremendous renewal of interest in anarchist ideas. I can't believe how many anarchist book fairs there are now across Canada. What does that say? That says that people are hungry for new ideas, new ways of thinking, new ways of being, new ways of, analyzing politically, making sense of the world around them. And the book fairs are quite an inspiration. Victoria, Vancouver, Toronto, Winnipeg, Saskatoon,
Edmonton.
It's like, yes, let's keep going. So, and Montreal, of course. So in the 80s, there was a bit of a wilderness, an anarchist wilderness for a while. And then that changed. And I can't explain that yet. I haven't done enough thinking about how to explain that, but there'll be a book about that one day.
What do you mean by the wilderness?
It seemed after the repression, after the huge amount of state repression against anybody who had anything to do with the Vancouver Five or any thought in any way, was trying to be supportive of their work or to be supportive of them in terms of defense committees, we had tremendous surveillance. Police were breaking into houses, visiting people at work. I was being followed around day and night in Montreal, and it's like, fuck off, give me a break, go catch some robber, some drug dealer, don't hassle me. But that came about during a time, too, when the new secret police, the CSIS, was coming into being, and we were opposing them at the same time.
Mm. So that was due to some crazy scandals within the RCMP intelligence stuff, right?
Yeah, which, and that still hasn't changed.
Yeah,
I mean, the scandals, the, the abuse of power, I mean, like, what do you expect from the National Police Force? They still haven't learned. So whether it's the RCMP or CSIS, the abuses continue, we continue. Mm. And I'm happy to come to Winnipeg to see Mondragon is still here. The Anarchist Bookshop in Montreal is doing well. There's anarchist info shops across the country that are springing up that are doing well. Now is a critical time historically for us to be out there talking about our ideas, So get out there and talk.
Thanks for talking with Black Mask.
Yeah, enjoy yourself tonight in bed, wherever you are.